my happy home to see what I could find out. I left my folk and friends with the aim to clear my mind out. Hit the rowdy road, many kinds I met there, many stories told me all of the way to get there. Ooh. So on I go, the seconds tick, the time out, there's so much left to know when I'm on the road to find out. Ooh.
On the road to find out, Cat Stevens, also known as Yusuf Islam. Welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers and advocates from around the world. Unspun brings you information that you need and asks the questions that need to be asked. We're streaming live on the internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the listen button. Unspun is a call-in show. We invite your questions and comments. Our number in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. And if you're listening to us streaming live, you can still call in on that number. We're here in the studio because we are live. And if you want to contact me another way, you can also send an email to unspun@kkrn.org. Our guest on the phone today is Jennifer Hines, climate researcher and environmental activist. She is, quote, a student of Buddhism and Eastern spirituality and a senior IT professional, a daughter of a foreign service officer. She grew up overseas in Southeast Asia, Laos, and West Africa, Ghana, and was exposed to indigenous cultures from an early age. This is this early exposure to world culture in the developing world led to a deep interest in world affairs as well as Eastern spirituality. Jennifer feels a deep sense of urgency about global warming and climate change and has studied it as a layperson for 10 years. In July of 2014, she developed a succinct presentation outlining the methane threat we face in our next chapter of life on Earth. Her video, Arctic Methane Monsters Rapid Rise, has since gone viral on the internet and has served to educate people around the world about the threat of near-term extinction. Jennifer's continuing personal journey is one of uniting scientific discovery with the transformation of consciousness and how to find balance amidst coming chaos, end quote. In 2015, she released the second video, Methane Monster 2, Demise of the Arctic. In both of her videos, she gives us a comprehensive and detailed analysis of the factors involved in global warming and climate change. Through her research, she now sees abrupt climate change and near-term human extinction as possible as possibilities. Her blog is Jennifer Hines as One, Living in View of Extinction. I will put links to her blog and to the slides in Methane Monster 2, along with some other information about climate change and about Jennifer. Well, without further ado, Jennifer Hines, welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling.
Hi, Doug. Thanks so much for having me on the show today. I'm really looking forward to it.
It is a great pleasure. I look at all the work that you have done. I can't imagine how much time and effort you put into creating Methane Monster 2. It's truly a large undertaking, and I have to believe that you're really motivated. So maybe we can start there, a little about your history and how you became motivated to become basically a freelance researcher about climate change and then going all the way to producing these videos and then having an excellent blog, by the way. I really enjoy going through it and just picking. Every time I go there, I find something new. So thank you for that work, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you got here.
Oh, absolutely. Like to take a whack at it in any case. I guess, you know, I have been having feelings about the whole global warming situation back as far as, like, it could have been even the late 80s. It was more of an intuitive thing that I was sort of waiting for because I really had the feeling it was going to happen. And I kept looking and looking, but there wasn't much news because it hadn't really started yet. And then one day I was actually in Mill Valley, California, and I was with my cousin and my sister, and we were having a little family reunion. And we ventured into a novelty store, and I picked up right there on the main street in Mill Valley a global warming sea level rise cup that when you put hot liquid into it, it melted the outer covering, and it basically exposed what the new coastline would look like if the ice sheets of Antarctica and Greenland melted entirely. And it was a bit of a shocker, but it's such an interesting cup, and I had taken it to work, and I was showing everybody about it. But emotionally, it started to grab me because, and it was initially sea level rise that got me going in this bent, because I realized, well, gosh, you know, I mean, I grew up in California on the coast, and I realized if sea level rises, we're shortly going to have a very, very different world. So I initially started researching sea level rise, but I saw it was sort of a slow process. I mean, you can't get, you know, 230 feet of sea level rise, you know, over, you know, right away. I mean, that takes a very, very long time. But in my studies, I ran into methane, and I started really studying it, and in the Arctic News blogspot, especially, but other places as well. You know, Sam Karana has been very, very good about getting information out there. And so I started to study the methane, and I think what you have to have, I think, in order to have a real cathartic reaction is you have to have the uniting of emotional information and scientific information, you know, kind of reuniting the right and the left sides of your brain. And that experience happened to me in September of 2012 when I flew over Greenland. And you might remember, Doug, in 2012 in the summer, 98% of the Greenland surface melted. There were rivers, there were moulins, there were all lakes, all sorts of things all over the surface of Greenland. And I had the opportunity to fly over Greenland, coming back from England, going to Denver, and we flew directly over it, and it was a cloudless day. And I saw for myself all the melting and the devastation, and it was basically just all falling apart. And the contrast was, is I had flown over Greenland as being a foreign, you know, daughter of the Foreign Service officer many times as a child, and, you know, it might not have been the same time, but I always remembered it as being this quite endless expanse, you know, and that was back in, like, the late 60s and early 70s. And this was very dark. It was very runny. You could see the glaciers were just dissolving into sea, and it was so sad to see that, and it was such a sort of emotionally shocking experience that when I came back to the U.S., I really redoubled my efforts and really tried to understand what was going on, because I was very concerned and I really wanted to know, and it became kind of my primary bent of discovery, and I discovered quite a lot, possibly more than I had counted on. And what I did discover is the threat of Arctic methane. And Arctic methane is throughout the Arctic. There's lots and lots and lots and lots of it. And it is a very powerful greenhouse gas when it first comes out. So that was my initial bent, Doug.
I was really impressed by one chart that you provided, a graph, and it shows atmospheric methane, CO2, and temperature all on the same graph, temperature in a centigrade. And the remarkable thing about it is that we are completely with CO2 and methane in the atmosphere. We're like in way into uncharted territory. It's kind of scary.
It is. It's very scary, and I know the graph that you're talking about. The dance between methane, carbon dioxide, sea level rise, ocean acidity, nitrous oxide, temperature, all of those factors, they all play together. And if you get a graph, which they are available, that goes back, you know, say 800,000 years, you can see all of these gases and measurements and factors in sync together. They're kind of in lockstep together, and when one goes up, the other goes up, and sea level goes up, and temperature goes up, and there are cycles. So, you know, it's almost like the Earth is breathing. You know, it goes up, and it goes down, and it goes up and down through the hundreds of thousands of years. But what we see when we look at the current temperatures compared over the last, say, million years or so, is that we have gone since probably, I guess, about 1950 or so, especially, pretty much straight up, and especially since 1980, we are on a vertical climb, and we might not see it in our day-to-day experience because, you know, human time frame and Earth time frame is a different sort of thing. You know, our lives are short. The Earth, you know, has been here and will persist. And what we can see is that what we are experiencing today with the rise of methane, the rise of carbon dioxide, the rise of, you know, temperature, and consequently the rise of sea level, and there are other factors in there as well, the rise of population, you know, lots of things. They all are in lockstep and syncing together. And, you know, given what we know, you know, how the population is increasing and how civilization itself is the heat-producing engine with our fossil fuel burning, we can see, you know, where this is going to lead. It's not going to suddenly level out. It's not going to say, okay, well, that's enough now. We're just going to level out, and that's enough, you know, of all of these things rising. What we can see is if we follow the trends in many years, it's going to be quite a bit up there with all of them, which means the temperature as well.
Well, this would take us, and I don't know where what you another chart you have shows the domino effect of methane and how that will tip the Arctic completely into an area, like I say, uncharted territories. We our human existence, we have not been around that long, even as a species, and so. Like Paul Ehrlich and others and Guy McPherson, we're destroying our own habitat. And yet so many of us have a hard time facing that, let alone dealing with it. So many people just don't want to even go there. They don't seem to be able to even grasp it or want to grasp it. Maybe it's a question of will or capability. Have you run into that same problem with people that you know, and how do you deal with that?
You know, generally speaking, I kind of proselytize where it will be most fruitful, and I don't really bother with heavy denialism because it's not worth my time or energy, to be honest with you. Sooner or later, the people who are in heavy denialism will have to wake up because abrupt climate change is upon us. And whether we want to grasp this fact or not is kind of irrelevant to the situation because this situation is upon us. Global warming is very much upon us. Throwing snowballs in Congress won't make a bit of difference. And, you know, we really, it would behoove all of us, you know, and us as a species, and, you know, we're here in America, you know, why don't we just wake up and, you know, I know methane is doesn't have a smell, but wake up and smell the methane, understand what's happening. It's a really hard thing to come to terms with, I have to say, and it is to everybody's, you know, immediate advantage, or so they would think, to just not deal with it. You know, I mean, the easiest way to deal with, you know, an oncoming train that's probably going to run over you if you don't want to get scared is just say, well, the train doesn't really exist. But in this case, the train really does exist, and it is coming. And I think because it's coming at us so fast, and we've caused this train to come at us so fast with our fossil fuel emissions, it would be a really good idea if we could first, A, say, a train is here, we can see it, and there's an oncoming train, and by the way, it's got a little headlight on it, and I can see that's coming right at me, and I'm standing on the track, you know, and then once we understand that it exists, try and do something. I mean, we need some sort of organization. I don't even really know what the answer is. I'm not really very good at, you know, government or anything like that. But we need to come together and try and mitigate and plan for this disaster that's going to be coming at us and can continue to come at us for the rest of our lives and far, far, far beyond, you know. The way I like to think about it is, the Earth is like a really heavy flywheel, you know, and we've been pushing on it as a civilization, especially since the turn of the Industrial Revolution, and we've been applying heat forcing to it with our carbon dioxide emissions, you know, unknowingly, but still it happened. Now, that flywheel's gained a lot of energy, and the atmospheric thermodynamics are getting wild, and the thing to understand is, you know, we were all like, well, all we have to do is stop burning fossil fuels now, you know, and then the whole thing will just kind of resolve. But unfortunately, it's not really like that, because we put so much energy into the turning of this flywheel. Now it's starting to turn, and we can probably get off the flywheel at this point. And, you know, we've put so much energy into it, it's just going to keep going. And there are other feedbacks, you know, lots and lots and lots of them, and they're starting to kick off and, you know, give their own energy to the turning of this flywheel, which is the degradation of our environment.
Let me interrupt you, and we'll come back. I want to really go back into those feedbacks, because this is another thing. Most people, even IPCC scientists, are not looking at, and something we need to be concerned about. But let me tell our listeners first, you're listening to Unspun, an experiment of truth telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Jennifer Hines, climate researcher and environmental activist, is with us today, and we're discussing abrupt climate change and the possibility of near-term human extinction. Our call-in number is 530-337-1885. 530-337-1885. We invite your comments. We'd love to have you call in with a question for Jennifer. Please call in, 337-1885. Yeah, coming back to these feedback loops, which were really, they're also tipping points, or those dominoes that you were referring to. Maybe you can enlarge on that, because a lot of people don't get it. They just think, oh, well, it's just going to all happen at a steady rate, and we got plenty of time. But that's not what science is telling us, is it?
No, it's not, unfortunately. And what we can know right away is that our tomorrows will not be like our todays, even if we put it sort of on a linear increase, because all of these environmental systems are connected together. So you talked about the domino. So if you think of the Arctic is sort of the top of the domino string, and, you know, the Arctic environment can be connected to other things. It can be connected to the permafrost, and it can be connected to the oceans and, you know, all of these other ecosystems. When the Arctic tips, and it has tipped, and we can talk about that in a minute, why I'm saying it has tipped, it will downstream affect a lot of other ecosystems and cause change in them and tipping in them as well. For example, the permafrost, which is a huge threat, is directly connected to the Arctic. It's right next to it. It's the land that's next to the Arctic Ocean and all throughout Canada and Siberia and the upper part of Russia. You know, when these ecosystems start to tip, then what is the permafrost connected to? Well, let's talk about what we're seeing in the permafrost right now, because it's rather startling. You know, you might have seen mention of those methane blowholes that are popping up in the Yamal Peninsula in Siberia. And they're very scary, and they're very large. You know, they're upwards of, you know, say 200 feet wide, and they're deep. and they just kind of, from our point of view, just kind of explode and pop, and then they're found. But these are manifestations of deep reserves of methane hydrate, which is frozen methane, methane that's encased in water crystals. And when it's frozen, it's in a very stable sort of state. And then when it thaws, it actually increases in size of like 164 times or something like that. I mean, a huge amount. So like one, you know, quart would be 164 quarts when it would, you know, thaw out. And that creates a tremendous amount of pressure. And then if you get, you know, little chimneys inside of the land and things like that, you can get these blowholes that just explode. Now, these things can explode within the ocean. They can explode on land. But what we're seeing is that there are methane blowholes that are now exploding throughout the Yamal Peninsula in Siberia, and I think we'll see more of those. And then what is the permafrost attached to, you know, the boreal forest? And we're seeing drunken forests, which means trees that are like tipping over because they can't, the land is no longer frozen, and where their roots have been is not permafrost anymore. It's permamush, and it's really not good enough to hold the trees. And then, you know, what's downstream of that? Our world is connected. What we have to understand is we are connected to our world. Our world is connected to everything, and we also are Earth. We are connected to our environment. You know, we might not think we are because we have, you know, very isolated sort of existence. We have computers, we have heat, we have hot water, we've got food on the shelves. And it does seem that we're not connected to our environment, but indeed we are, and that's where our food comes from. So,
Jen, let me interrupt you. We have a caller. She's been waiting about 3 minutes on the line, and I'd like to take her call and see what she has to say, okay?
Sounds great.
Betsy, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Jennifer, thank you for your incredible work connecting the dots, I think, with all of our scientists out there in their specialized corners of the universe. To have someone like you perform this service for all of us is so profound. And I know you're a believer in Dr. Guy McPherson's work, as I am, and I'm wondering what your opinion is of the timeline, if these positive self-reinforcing feedback loops really are of extreme concern. And when he started counting them some short while ago, he had identified 20 of them. Now he's over 50 of these feedback loops that threaten us. And to me, the million-dollar question is, if you understand these feedback loops, what is our timeline? You know, I don't personally believe we have decades anymore. I think we're really down to a decade at best. That is what's important to me. How do we live our final years with this knowledge? Because, of course, we'll do everything differently if we know this is our last decade or our last 2 decades or maybe our last 2 years. So that's my question for you.
Yeah, great question, Betsy. Thank you.
Thanks, Betsy. It's really hard to come to terms with the shortness possibility, you know, that we have left, the shortness of time that we have left, where temperatures are temperate, where the environment is normal and still growing. As you said, I'm also a proponent of Guy McPherson's work. I think he's an incredibly intelligent person and has been very brave in going out on the front. And, you know, he's caused a revolution unto himself. He does say somewhere around, you know, decades or 30 years. I mean, I'm so hesitant to put time frames on it, but let's just kind of extrapolate out, and we'll pretend like we know what we're talking about. If you go out, say, 30 years, right, that puts us out to the year 2046, right, almost 2050. And, you know, knowing how quickly now things are changing, every single year is hotter than the year before. Every single year is bringing bigger abrupt climate change events than the year before. And they're not always what you would think. You know, they can be very big snowstorms. Take a look what's been happening in the Northeast. So you know, picture 2045, and we've had 30 years of every year being hotter than the year before, and 30 more years of intensive ocean acidification, and 30 more years of all of these feedback loops, which are currently active and adding their own speed to the degradation of the system. I just can't imagine how it would be in the year 2050, for example. You know, that would be like 34 years. You know, so let's just say 2050. How would this world be in 2050 if year over year it's been hotter and year over year the acidity? I mean, what's happening to our poor oceans? You know, they're dying. Our oceans are dying. I mean, how can this be invisible to anybody? So what to do about all of this? God knows. You know, I struggle with this. I don't have any answers, unfortunately, Betsy. I mean, I'm also like you, looking at this whole system breaking down and looking what all these highly intelligent people have been saying and listening to them and trying to figure it out for myself. It caused and continues to cause me great trauma, and it brings up a lot of feelings of fear and mortality. And I really think more than ever in any other part of time, we need to come together and really take comfort with the people that we love, because nobody wants to face this alone. I think we need to come to a place where we can open up and love each other more. So hopefully there will be an opening of the global heart, but I don't hold much faith out that this will last with human habitation and everything else past 2050. I can't see it happening. It's going too fast. That's what I see.
I would agree. So many people that I've interviewed, and I mean, including pretty well-known and well-respected scientists, even they will now, you know, James Hansen, they're all in getting to that point where they're going, well, we were wrong. It's going to happen sooner, and we need to do something now. And we know the answers. We have the answers to these problems. We actually do. So it becomes a question of will in my mind. And I'm with you. Unless enough people awaken, we are going to go through this one last catastrophe for mankind. I don't see how to avoid it, because part of what's going to happen, if only a little bit of sea level rise, let's say 3 meters, which I think Hansen came out recently and said that we could be there by 2050. Well, 3 meters is like 9 feet, and these scientists are all conservative, so let's make it an even 10. And 10 foot of sea level rise. Plus, there was an article out a couple of days ago. Well, they've been wrong about the rate of sea level rise because they hadn't factored in the amount of expansion in the seawater, because the ocean is taking up so much of the heat. Not only the CO2, but it's taking up the heat and expanding more rapidly than they thought. So all of this is another one of those positive feedback loops that are going to be our undoing if we don't act now. And so, excuse me for proselytizing, but I'm kind of with you, and I think Guy McPherson and Carolyn Baker, who I've had on the show, they understand this, and part of what they're doing is going to grief therapy, to mourning, because we have so much to mourn: species loss, habitat loss. One of your slides on your show, it shows the four horses, not the horsemen, but the four horses of the apocalypse, plus a new little stranger, the seahorse. And they're all looking, the four horses are looking at the seahorse, and they're saying, really, this little guy is now the fifth horse of the apocalypse? And one of them says, rising sea levels. So, you know, I'm with you. But what people don't understand, this is not only a climactic change. This is going to be a huge change for human civilization, and we don't even know if we're up to it. We're not even sure that we can deal with that, that we have anything in place. And it looks like we got another caller. I'm going to wait for a second. I know we can deal with this. I don't know what the caller is going to want to talk about. We'll deal with that first. But our ability as a civilization, and maybe because we've gotten too fat and lazy, overconsumption is one of our problems, but maybe we are not suited to survive any longer. So I'm going to take this call. I got another caller on the air, and let's bring him on. Randy, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know that with the with all the things we're facing with population growth, resource challenges, pollution, climate change, there should be nobody at this point that can not acknowledge that we have to make huge changes, whether we want to or not. Huge changes are coming, and as far as guiding the change that we're going to go through, I feel like there's only two ways. We have to, you know, like through politics, we have to try to keep people in charge that can face reality and deal with reality. And on the other side, it's at the ground level where we have to rearrange our lives and our societies in the ways of sustainability. And so with these two things, I think that is our challenge. And I don't really see it all as a bad thing with rearranging our societies, because we can reform our total cultural structure in ways that I think that everybody would be much happier with than what we're doing right now. That's about all I had to say.
Did you have a question, Randy?
Well,
for,
you know,
Jennifer?
I would ask her, you know, what she thinks about my perspective on what we have to do, you know, ahead of us. How do we make the changes that we need to make?
Hey, Randy, those are really good questions, and certainly greater minds than mine have worked on it. I don't really know really what the answer is to your question, to be honest. I wish I did. I wish I knew there was a way to deal with this. I'm not that much of a policy person. I'm kind of more like, I can see what's happening and I can tell people about it, but what to do about it? I mean, God knows. I mean, humankind is up for such a rude awakening. And those of us who have been looking at this issue of global warming and watching it and watching the oncoming train know that humankind is going to go through deep pain and deep trauma. And yeah, we all die anyway. That's part of the human condition. But we don't want to die like this. We don't want to die in trauma en masse. And it might not even be climate directly, right? I mean, take a look at Syria. Syria's crisis was brought on initially, my belief, by climate and by drought. And when people don't have enough to eat, and when they're hungry and upset and oppressed and, you know, all other things, you know, you have that. You have refugees, you have war, you have all this turmoil. And that is a direct result from climate, plus other factors as well, of course. But as far as what to do about this on a grand scale, you know, I think it would really be good if people at large could come to understand that we are in a disaster and that we're in a time of demise and that we need to grasp it. But there's no room right now in the culture. You know, you turn on the TV and you have, you know, 200 channels with nothing on it, and God help if you want to find anything that's going on in the world really about climate or environment. It's just not there. And everything in our culture serves up this level of unreality. We have got to wake up and we have got to grow up as a species and understand that our mutual benefit and our mutual survival is intimately tied with our environment and the degradation of the environment at such an incredible level that's happening right now is ultimately the demise of not only humankind, but other life on Earth. And I don't see a way out of it, but I do believe that there are ways that we can mitigate it if we group together and form some sort of, you know, organization and plan. But I don't know what that would be. I'm sorry.
Well, let me take this moment here at the bottom of the hour to make a few community announcements, and then we'll come back to Jennifer Hines and the methane monster. Let's see. We've got two here I think are important. Wicked Fell Radio Theater players are going to have a Darwin Day event, and the name, it's a play. It's called Chase Darwin Gunslinger, and it'll be live in the community room of the Reading Library on 2-7 Super Bowl Sunday at 2:30 in the afternoon, and I think the actual play will start about 3. They have refreshments. They're asking people that are thinking about things other than a bunch of grown men beating each other up out on the field, might want to go do something like this, which is a little more thought-provoking and maybe more enjoyable as a community. The other event actually is a series of events. Our local Reading Climate Coalition that's just formed not too long ago is working with First United Methodist Church and also with KKRN as co-sponsors. So we have, January 19th, we already had an event with Dr. Doug Craig, who is a great supporter. And on Tuesday, February 16th, you might want to put this on your calendar, This Changes Everything, a documentary of hope by Naomi Klein from the front lines of climate crisis, will be at the First United Methodist Church. That's 1825 East Street at 6:30 p.m. on February 16th. And I know I'm going to be there. I have her book, but I haven't read it yet. So this might be an easy way to cut down on my reading. Please think about supporting those things. Both of those things are supported by KKRN and also the community, so we can all work together and maybe come to this place that Jennifer Hines has been talking about. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Jennifer Hines is a climate researcher and environmental activist. She's with us today on the phone, and we're discussing abrupt climate change and the possibility of near-term human extinction. Our number in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. We really do invite your calls and your questions and your comments, so don't hesitate, 337-1885. Well, Jennifer, coming back to some of those thoughts, what strikes me about what you do is there's a spiritual dimension, and it's more holistic. And you call yourself a generalist, which I can appreciate because I kind of think that I'm a generalist also for years, just watching the world and reading and thinking and sharing ideas and working with other people. The kind of the strength, I think it's one of your strengths, is you're combining these spiritual factors. So what, I know what I think about this question, but what do you think society, have we lost our way on a spiritual path as a society, as a civilization? Or were we ever really on one? Were we destined for this, and it's just simply something that would have been fated from the beginning, possibly?
Well, what I think we've lost more than anything, Doug, is our connection with the earth, and I think that's a spiritual matter. You know, spirituality is a very personal thing, and, you know, some people, you know, everybody believes something a little bit different, and so we won't get into too much to the details of spirituality. I think it's a great comfort if you can develop spiritual feelings and have a spiritual practice. But, you know, I know it's not really where everybody is at, and I'm all for that. So what I think is very important, and anybody can do this, is to go spend time in nature and really start to feel the spirit of the earth. You know, we live on such a beautiful planet, and it's so unlikely in so many ways, you know, when you look at it. You know, we're out here spinning in the middle of the vacuum of space, you know, living on a very thin biosphere on a planet that's got a core of molten iron, and we're going around a ball of fire. I mean, the whole thing is kind of wild, right, when you think about it. But we have lost our connection to our vibrant earth. And, you know, the indigenous American Indians knew all about this. All indigenous people know about it because they live so close to the earth. We have divorced ourselves from the earth, and we live, you know, 3 or 4 layers away from it, and myself included. Everybody in the highly civilized world does. Now, as far as spirituality, it gives me personally a great comfort to contend with this information and try and deal with it, because I don't view it necessarily as a closed physical system, but that is just something that I've come through and something that I've come to on my own. You know, consciousness, when you really examine consciousness, it's a very unusual thing. You know, just the fact that you and I are sitting here talking to each other, albeit, you know, via electronics and technology, we both have consciousness and we're able to communicate this. This is a very interesting thing. And so consciousness really has to be looked at. Many of the great thinkers of the world could not get behind consciousness. You know, it's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg, you know, when you deal with, you know, physical evolution and things like that. But you always have to consider consciousness and who is observing this and the life force that's powering this all. So these types of thoughts and feelings help me. Also, if you can quiet your mind, you know, there's a lot of stress dealing with these stories, as we do, you know, those of us that look at this on a daily basis. Your blood pressure can start to go up and you can start to feel crappy because you just deal with these horrible stories all the time about, you know, the latest catastrophe that's happening on Earth. It's very difficult. So you need to have some way of processing that information. And for some of us, it could be spirituality. For others, you know, a good, you know, common denominator for everybody is have some good friends and some people in your life that you really love and that understand you and that you can talk to about these things. And that can provide comfort. We need to find ways to provide mental and spiritual and emotional comfort in these times of demise, because the stress, you know, from my point of view, is really just starting. We're just starting to enter into that bend of the hockey stick, and I think that we ain't seen nothing yet, baby. I think it's going to get worse.
I did a little piece on a panel at the local college. We had a panel on climate change a couple months ago, and I was trying to figure out some way, you know, and you present so many graphs, which are great ways to communicate if, you know, if people take the time to look at them and understand them. So I had one graph. But it's the same graph. It's the hockey stick, only it's population. Well, I drew it first, so it's basically population climbing in a fixed environment. Where I got the graph from is actually yeast in a bottle of beer, and as the yeast, they you know, it's exponential their growth when they have plenty of resources, and at that, but they reach a point, a tipping point, just like we're talking about here. So they overconsume and they overpopulate, and then inevitably, you know, it's predictable, it happens in every bottle of beer, and at some point their population starts to taper off, and then they hit a event horizon, some people would call it, a tipping point where just bang, everything crashes. And I was trying to scare the hell out of these people that were in the audience. We had over 100 people. And seriously, I had 5 minutes, and I said, you know, you need to be scared, because if you're scared, that means you understand what the possibilities are. And that was my contribution. And I just want to wake people up. You're talking about consciousness, and so what's the best ways? I know you're talking about a consciousness and dealing with the reality, but so much of our reality is going to depend on a collective reality. And so how, I know a lot of what you do is to affect that, because otherwise you wouldn't spend all this time that you do on climate research and creating these videos. But what's your philosophy there around increasing consciousness?
Oh, very interesting. But I'd like, first of all, to address something that you said that's very, very important, and that is the exponential function. We need to have a bigger imagination. Human beings do. One of the biggest failings in understanding the climate crisis that is currently upon us is not understanding the exponential function. And just for a little example, you use the bacteria, or, you know, the yeast. Well, let's just use, you know, bacteria. if everything is doubling, you know, every, like, say, 10 years or something like that, right before it doubles the last time, before it fills the entire bottle or the entire stadium or whatever container it is that you're looking at, the day before it doubles, how full is it? It's 50%. So when we have reached, you know, 50% of where we know is we cannot go beyond that, that's on our last day. And that's because things are growing exponentially. And exponential is a curved line, and it just, it's part of the hockey stick. It's part of, like, the polynomial trend line, and it goes straight up. So once we grasp that, you know, the exponential function is in play and things are increasing exponentially, we perhaps can start to take on board that this is in fact happening. And once we take on board that this is in fact happening, we can start to deal with the deeper things in our consciousness. And we have to start dealing with grief, because this is a huge loss. It's such a huge loss that we can't even hardly feel it. The loss of our habitat, of our planet, of our earth, of living beings, it's almost inconceivable. It's almost to the point where you can't quite compute it. You can't quite comprehend it. And, you know, the first time a person hears the term near-term human extinction, they look at you. I tried this out over the Christmas holidays with my parents at a holiday party. It was probably ill-timed, but it definitely got a response.
Might be the perfect venue.
Over Christmas. And one of my parents' poor friends, you know, my parents are very supportive of me. I'm unfortunate in that regard, you know. But he said, "What are you talking about?" You know, and he looked at me like I was absolutely insane. And the first time you hear the concept near-term human extinction, you're like, that doesn't even really compute. What are you talking? How could we not exist? Everything is so great. We've got everything that we need. But we have to start to come to terms with this and take it on board inside of our consciousness. And it's a mourning process, and it's devastating. Once you start to understand it, it's so devastating. And I don't know that you ever get through it. You know, once you take on board this whole crisis that's happening in near-term human extinction, you begin a process that will never end for the rest of your life. And it goes through different phases, and some days are better than others. But all through it is the processing and the maturation of your own consciousness. And I think what we will find is that we will reach out for others who are also waking up and cling to them and bring them into our hearts, because it is a time where there's a lot to talk about, but you need to talk about you need to talk about these things with somebody who really understands you. If you talk to somebody and they just look at you with either glazed eyes or, you know, as if you're crazy, even worse, when you've been actually studying this. This has happened to me quite a few times. You know, people have looked at me like I'm insane when I tell them these things. And you're just like, well, I'll try and explain it to you best I can, but, you know, you're going to have to go and contend with it yourself. This is a thing that we have to each, on an individual level, come to contend and process for ourselves.
Well, I've got another question. Willie McCarty from Training Easy with Willie, which is a great show that he puts on Tuesday, the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. Anyway, he's in the control room here with me, and he's got a question for you, Jennifer.
Jennifer, thank you very much for your work. I really appreciate it. I'm a optimist. I'm always optimistic. I look at everything and say, we're going to figure this out. However, listening to the show today, I said, well, what would I do if it was certain that we weren't going to work it out? That in 30 years, it's going to go. And we are not going to have humankind. How would I live my life for the next 30 years that way? It's a different way of for me to approach it, because I'm always saying, we're going to figure this out. We're going to do it. We're going to, with Jennifer and Doug and all the people out there that are going to do the right thing, we're going to change it. But I all of a sudden said, well, what if not? What if all of a sudden I've capped off all those beer bottles and stuck them into my cellar, and all of a sudden I start hearing those beer bottles popping? and realize, uh-oh, I did too much yeast. Uh-oh, I can't stop that process now. And it is inevitable that I'm going to lose those bottles of beer. It is inevitable that mankind is going to disappear. If I look at it that way, how would I live my life the next 30 years? It's just my thank you for all the work you're doing.
Well, you know, I can't even promise that I have anywhere near any of the answers. You know, I'm a person like you, just struggling along and trying to put it all together and make sense of it. But I guess what we can do is live absolutely in the present as much as possible, knowing what you know, kind of in an overlay of your consciousness, that this time is upon us, and we actually are in a time of great, great demise. And it's sort of a time of reckoning, you know. It's a time of self-reflection, and it's a time of knowing, well, if our tomorrows are not going to be like our today's, and if it's not going to be as temperate, and if the storms are in fact going to be a lot worse, which they are, how can I live this moment that I'm living right now, this very, very moment? And maybe if we try and capture the specialness and the magic and the ecstasy and the love that we can find in our current moment, that may help us. And, you know, but I even that, gosh, you know, I mean, Guy says only love remains. And I think it's a great phrase. And it's correct, but it's hard to put into practice. And it's also sort of a little ephemeral, you know. And I'm struggling with this so hard, just like you are. And I don't know the answer. I know what is upon us, and I know what's unfolding, but I don't know how to make it better, except we're going to, you know, we have to treasure our own individual lives and cleave to our own individual lives and try and love other people. That's the only thing I can think of. Now, there's a lot of other things that need to happen as well, right? Policy and, you know, movements and government, and God knows how they're going to contend with this, because they're going to have to start to contend with it and stop doing silly things like denying things that are so completely obvious and so supported by science, and start believing in science. It kind of blows me away that people can choose to believe or not to believe in science as if it might be something that you can have an opinion about. Well, as far as I know, science and the laws of physics and chemistry are all very much in play in the physical world. So, but good luck. I mean, you know, if things can be changed without science, I'm, you know, very willing to see. But what to do in the meantime, I think we just love the people in our lives as much as we can and do things that are meaningful. Do something that you're going to be proud of. I mean, we're in a time of demise. What can we do that we think will help somebody else, that will help the world at large? Is there anything that we can do within our power that might shift the consciousness so it can start to be open to these thoughts and to these understandings? That's all I can really come up with at this time.
Well, let me kind of respond to Willie and to listeners. There are people in our own communities. Reading Climate Coalition was just formed in Reading, and it's growing. People that are willing to get out, do something, educate, wake people up, take action. Some of my really close friends are taking action, direct action, some of them, because if you want solutions, the first things you're going to have to do is get the attention of the people in power, because it's going to have to come down at a very high level and happen all over. We can find our own peace, yes, as Jennifer's talking about, but we can also be working to take responsibility for what we've already created. We know the solutions. It's just putting them in place. And then, you know, putting money and willful action towards those solutions. We know the solutions. We've got to stop using fossil fuels. It's pretty simple. Need to go to renewable fuels. We need to cut back. We're over-consuming. We're destroying our planet through our own pollution. So we know what the problem is. I have one more caller, and he is a guy that we greatly respect and been helpful in so many ways in our community. And he has a Climate of Change blog on a local newspaper website, Dr. Doug Craig. I'm going to bring him on the air. Doug, you're on the air. I'm not hearing you, Doug. Yeah, I can hear you a little better. You're on the air.
I'm sorry. I'm on my cell.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, if you probably have to speak a little louder, but okay.
Okay, I'm trying to talk loud. Anyway, I just want to say, as a psychologist, what I try to help my clients deal with in their own way, they're dealing with tragedies in their own lives, and I think we have to take what we learn from our clients and apply that to this horrible problem we're dealing with. And what I usually try to help my clients understand is the number one thing is we accept what we can't change and try not to dwell on the horror of it, and instead connect with our values. And, you know, whether we have 30 years or whatever the time frame is, we still want to live in the present moment, let go of what we can't change, open up to what our life experience is, connect with our values, and engage as much as we can with one another on this, what I consider to be one of the most exciting opportunities in the history of the human race to save our civilization. And even if we fail, at least we can wake up each day excited by another opportunity to do the right thing and not do what, you know, we see so many of our fellow citizens do, and that is just get lost in denial or avoidance or stupid entertainment. So, you know, it's a great opportunity to come together and awaken one another, and there's so much work to be done. There's really no time to sit around and dwell in despair. That's all I want to say.
Okay, thank you, Doug. And there's only a minute left in the show, and I want to let Jennifer have that minute to say whatever she wants or provide us with website information, phone numbers, whatever you'd like to do, Jennifer. 1 minute.
Well, I'd like to respond to Doug. I'm really appreciative of the work you're doing, and I'd like to also say that action is the antidote to despair, as has been said many times. You know, when a situation is upon us, if we just sit in the corner and look at it and dwell on it and watch it kind of come down on our heads, that's not really a very proactive way to deal with it. And if we can galvanize ourselves, if we can galvanize others, if we can spread awareness and do the right thing, do something we're proud of, and take action, we'll be in a lot better mental state and emotional state to deal with this.
Well, Jennifer, we're just out of time right now. You hear a little music probably come on in the background. That's our musical cue to whoa, there it is. Anyway, I want to thank you once again for all your work, and that's an applause from Willie. Thank you, Willie. Anyway, we have truly enjoyed having you on Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling today.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been really a pleasure and an amazing experience. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you. And bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, you've been listening to Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling. Our guest today has been Jennifer Hines, climate researcher, environmental activist, and blogger at Jennifer Hines as One. As usual, I will put links to her videos and Methane Monster 2 slides and her blog online at KKRN with the archives of today's show. You'll find those at kkrn.org/shows/unspun. Special thanks to David Korn of Special Projects for his efforts in arranging this interview. Thank you, David. Thank you, Jennifer, once again. And next week on Unspun, we'll be talking with local CIA operative, retired, and head of the Euphrates Institute, Janessa Gans Wilder. After sitting in Iraq in the Green Zone, she figured out she had a better idea on how to fight terrorism. Tune in Saturdays, 9 a.m. for more of Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling. Thanks for listening. Next up, Peace Talks Radio.